You are listening to the Riverfront Church Podcast, a place to explore faith, history, ideas, and more.
Hey, Riverfront Church, and welcome to the 505 Podcast. Friends, it's been a while. It's been a while since we've had a podcast guest. It's been a while since we have had a conversation around a mic. And I realized that this is my first podcast in person with a live guest. So, Jessica, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me. This is so fun.
Yeah. So, in the small Delaware world, Ken Grant, who is the master of all connections, put this connection together and found out that Jessica Ritchie, the co-author of our Lenten devotional, recently moved to the area.
That's right. A new Delawarean.
A new Delawarean.
Yeah, first date, best date, I think.
For sure.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So Jessica just recently moved and is willing to sit down with us. So welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah.
This is so nice.
So how long have you been in Delaware?
Oh, I moved, I think, like February 1st. So this is still pretty new.
Yep. Still have boxes.
Oh, all boxes. Nothing is on my walls. I'm like, none of my clothes are even out of, like, suitcases yet.
Yep.
I'm like, I really have to figure that out. You don't feel settled yet until you're, like, have things hung on a wall in a very predictable place. So that's going to be this week's goal, I think.
To hang things. Yeah. I'm one who hangs things immediately when
I
move.
That's what I need to learn.
But then I regret it. Because then it's not actually where I want any of my art, and then I move everything around and just have, like, 100 holes.
That's everywhere. Right, in the walls, yeah. Your landlords, I'm sure, love.
Yeah, they love that.
Yeah.
all right, so new to Delaware. Mm-hmm. Just tell us a bit about this book. Let's maybe jump to the book and what inspired it.
Sure, so I have the great joy of getting to work with Kate Bowler every day, and we have been working together, gosh, now for the last, since 2017, so however many, I'm definitely a word person and not a math person.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
However many years that is, and she's a professor at Duke University, she's a historian, she's actually the person who wrote the first history of the prosperity gospel, which mm-hmm. is this idea that God will grant you health, wealth, and happiness if you just pray hard enough and have enough faith, and so she studied that out of pure curiosity, but then in a deep, dark humor irony, was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer at age 35, and out of that wrote a book called Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved, mm-hmm. where she really investigated this idea of, like, I studied this as a historian, but did I kind of think that my life would work out too? Like, do we all kind mm-hmm. of have this pervasive myth inside of us that says maybe we're the exception to bad things happening, and so then when something does happen, then we can get blamed so easily or feel it ourselves. It's so punitive to imagine that, like, is God punishing me? Is this my fault? Should I have worked harder? Should mm-hmm. I have prayed harder? Should I believe something different? And married with our culture's insistence on self-help and wellness, that we really can fix our lives if we just make our beds. Do you know, making your bed might alter
it might
DNA.
Change the whole day.
It really could unlock something, a different, like, level of perfection. So out of that, we started a podcast and an initiative at Duke where we get to make resources on these themes, on, like, what about when life kind of, like, comes undone?
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of resources do you need in the midst of that, in the midst of a life that doesn't work out? And might God still be there? Like, who is God when God wasn't who I thought God would be, when God wasn't, didn't follow those, like, I have a plan and a promise for your life, kind of, like, Jeremiah 29:11 kind of version of God, where, like, wait a second, I think I'm off the trajectory, because this is supposed to work out, I'm supposed to be the exception. And so we have a podcast and books and resources for churches and pastors, and we serve a really beautiful community of people who are hungry for something new mm-hmm. language around this stuff.
Yeah, and as pastor, right, I really appreciate that language.
Yeah.
And I think so quickly have been drawn into Kate's work and then into this book and this devotional for us, because it has put some language to, I think, the life that we live at Riverfront.
Mm.
In that Riverfront is a messy place, and is a place where folks come with lots of different walks of life and lots of different experiences of faith. And I think one of the challenges is like how to hold all of those together, right? Like how to hold the story of church has always been my safe place and it is my home and it is good, and church has done a lot of harm and I don't know if I can go back. And then like not only church and religion, but how that affects our relationship with God and with one another.
That's right. What about when Christians are bad and have caused a lot of pain?
Right. And that like the church is not just this like institution that we can put blame on, but that the church is filled with people.
Yeah. Right. Who are just as fallible as me, unfortunately.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So how, you talked a bit about how Kate got into this work, but how did Jessica get into this walk?
Oh, well, I'd love to read. I would just prefer to be the spokesperson of someone else. Well, I, again, not a math person, but probably for the last 15 years, I've been in like Christian publishing world. So working with authors and speakers and helping create marketing and branding and book launches and help write books and ghostwriting books. And so that's been kind of the world that I've lived in. I went to a pretty conservative undergrad, Christian undergrad, where I was a theology major because it was the only thing that interested me was all the Bible and theology classes. But nobody was having conversations with me. None of my professors were about what my plans were after graduation because I was one of two women in the program, and all the men were being handed churches, which was concerning now in retrospect. And or then considering seminary in some capacity, and I was like, well, I think I'm good at this and I really enjoy these conversations and this feels like it really brings richness and meaning, and yet I don't really know where this fits. Like, there's not a career path for women in ministry except if I wanted to do kids men or women's ministry or something. And so I think I've found a I've kind of fell into some really rich opportunities of working with in areas of impact and meaning where, as I kind of like untangled some of my own theology around what my role is in the church and in the gospel, that it opened some new doors. So when I met Kate, it was like 2015. She was working on her book, Preacher's Wife, where she was interviewing a bunch of women, mega church celebrities.
Okay.
And I was working for one, and we met, and she was like, you have to go to seminary. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, who's going to pay for that? And what would I do with it? And so it was kind of after that that I decided to go to Duke Div for my MDiv. And then when I got there, Kate was working on her launching her book. And she was like, wait a second, you know how to do this exact work. And I was like, yes, I do. So we started working together from there. But in terms of the content, I think those questions of meaning and a faith that can like shore up a life that doesn't always work out was, is the thing that I'm interested in. I'm not interested in the like trite precious moments kind of faith that you buy at Cracker Barrel, you know, like I'm, that serves a lot of people until it doesn't, until a life comes undone, until you lose somebody before you were ready to say goodbye, before the diagnosis or the divorce or the miscarriage. Like there has to be something. Like I will like fight to find something or dig deeper to find a God who can live there with us. Cause that's the real like muck of it all, is the like, where are you when life is stripped to the bones? Like, where are you now, God? Because I can't work my way up this ladder. There's no behavior I can perform that makes this easier.
Yeah. Right. And that, I think for me, that's why I gravitate towards the Psalms so much. Right. Like, one of the Psalms and Job, I think, for for a while people would ask me, what is your favorite book of the Bible, and I would say Job.
You're like, yeah, the boils are really enticing, everything,
right? And like awesome. And at that point, right, I think when I was giving that answer, I was in college, and like college me to me now, like, if
bless her, like, right? Bless her heart, she bless thought her. She knew what pain was back then.
Like, if no college clue. Me could like I just laugh thinking about like that my answer was Job then. And I was like, really?
Trauma.
Right? Like there was some stuff in college, but there was a lot of life left. And there's still a lot of life left, right? But what like beauty is that the scriptures hold that depth.
Yeah, but why isn't that the story that we
We don't tell that,
like,
right?
To tell.
No.
I'd rather have that story of, hey, where's God in the whirlwind? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Job's life is ripped apart, seeming by permission by God, you know? But instead we kind of tell the Sunday school felt versions of, like, Noah's Ark or, you know, just interesting.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So, I lived in the kidsmen and youthmen world for a while, and would have parents say, like, they're too young, right? They're too young to learn about that. Mm. And yet, and I think there's a degree of that, but also they're living in this world and they are experiencing loss and they are experiencing grief even when they are four, right? So, like, how, I think sometimes we're, like, afraid to use, like, to give language and give permission because we're like, is it too soon? But then when trauma happens, if we haven't already been using that language, then it's like, okay, now I have to learn a whole new mindset and a whole new language, and I am in the midst of trauma.
Yeah, right. With what time?
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
And so I think, like, there's just so many questions, and I think we do harm as a church in not opening that up for permission earlier on. And, like, to some level, to be able to figure out some level to talk about it with kids.
Yeah.
But then also just, like, normalizing that language and conversation as adults.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think people are so, can be, me too, drunk on the idea that, like, God does want to give me hope in a future. And, like, that is so compelling. Like, of course. We want the easy way out. We want the, like, eject button from our normal stressors. And so that can be the, you know, gosh, I think in the American religious imagination, that's the compelling narrative that a lot of our really successful, I'm using air quotes for this very visual medium that we're on, successful churches would rather kind of preach a story of promise and of hope. And of course, the Christian story is rooted in hope, but not without the normal realities of being human, again, in a world that, like, will break your heart.
Yeah, so what are some of those scriptures that you turn to as you were, I get you mentioned the wrestling of what is my place as a woman. So as you started those wrestlings, and as you have been seeped in this work, what are some of your spots where you're like, I gotta wrestle here for a minute?
Oh man, well, Paul and I have many a years of wrestling. I think the, like, deeply honest answer was, I think I had to, like, take two steps back from the Bible because I think I hadn't learned a non-literal version of scripture yet because I was so young and, like, that, it seems, like, so black and white at the time. And I needed to kind of take a couple steps back and see through the eyes of other people and how they've interpreted scripture over time and how they, like, have found so much, like, roominess and peace and comfort in Bible, and then, like, work my way back into seeing scripture with new eyes. So, like, good God, Barbara Brown Taylor, if I could just, like, have the way, like, the way that she sees and reads and interprets scripture in such a life-giving, loving, hope-filled, real way.
Yeah.
Frederick Buechner, another person who just opens it up with such a literary imagination of, like, man, these people are just so rich. Even, like, Anne Lamont. I love the way that Anne Lamont talks about being human and the way that God intersects her life. So I think I turned to a lot of voices, and then it gave me new imagination to, like, relook at the scripture and wrestle again and open up commentaries in a new way that are, like, what kind of, like, position is this person coming to the text with, and what might I be able to see too, and just take the Bible a little bit more seriously in that way. That rather than just, like, black and white, what does this verse speak to my individual life? Yeah. Because that's, you know, how it's meant to be read.
Always. Yeah, and I think on my end, it's coming at lots of different authors, right? Yeah. Has also challenged me to give grace and try to find some understanding with folks who I really disagree with.
Yep, that's
right. Like, what has gone on in your life to lead you to this lens?
That's right. What about this story is compelling based on what you've experienced or what you need to be true?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Yeah, and then to, like, have conversation of that need, what do we need to be true? And what parts of that do we hold together? Mm. And what parts are really different?
Yeah. Yeah, and then also, what do I need to be true? Mm-hmm. Like, what am I coming to this? Yeah, what,
like, don't mess with, right? Where are my points of, like, do not mess with this because I'm going to shut down?
That's right, yeah. Then it all falls apart. It's like the Jenga puzzle, you know? Of, like, where is that one piece that will knock it all over if you just nudge it too much?
Yeah, and then I feel like one of the challenges is for me to, like, sit with that piece, right? To, like, all right, let me hold this Jenga block for a minute.
Yeah.
What all is covered? Like, what is this block covered in?
Yeah, what is so precious about it that I can't quite let it go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think for me, one of the gifts of seminary was hearing and sitting with lots of people and lots of Jenga blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And being like, all right, we are all called into some sort of ministry, and not all of us were going to lead a church, and not all of us were going to preach, but, like, all of us are going into ministry in some kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And how is there room for God in all of this?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I think that seminary taught me just how to ask better questions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It was never about finding the answers.
Absolutely.
But I thought.
Right? We, like, go to seminary thinking, like, we're going to find the answers.
No.
This is going to get easier.
It all gets more. It's like when you're braiding hair. Well, I have, like, long hair that's really a lot of split ends. But you know when you're braiding hair at the top and then all of a sudden it starts braiding itself at the bottom as you go down and you're like, I just thought I was, like, cleaning things up here and this is actually, like, getting
really
at the bottom. That's what it feels like.
Yep. I'm feeling a lot of feels about that statement.
That's right.
Right. And how is, like, that good?
Mm.
Right. And how do we then replicate that in our day-to-day lives?
Well, and speaking from, I'm not in a traditional ministry context in the sense that I don't have, like, a people that I'm supposed to be shepherding in a very direct way.
I'm thinking you have, like, lots
that's
of
right,
people.
That's right.
Well, lots of people you're shepherding in a very direct that's way. Right. How many people this Lent have read your words?
Too many that made me uncomfortable, and I just hope that they like it. But I do the deep responsibility that then comes with, like, okay, my theology bears literal cost and has literal cause and effects on the people that I, like, meet and care for and love, like, who's in and who's out. And so always questioning, like, where am I missing it? Who am I excluding? What kind of voices am I really uncomfortable hearing if they're on a different political side of the spectrum or a different, like, you know, where they land on this theological point? Like, oh man, it's just like, there are, like, literal costs to the way we imagine how we imagine, how we define, how we name who God is.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the faces we're both making right now, like, podcast, you would appreciate.
Deeply uncomfortable.
Squirming at the couch.
Squirmy, like, who put me in charge?
Right. I, like, all the time. And I feel like before every time that I preach, before even, like, a small online devotional, I get this, like, feeling in my stomach, right, of utter terror and utter, like, what if I mess this up?
Mm-hmm.
Last night for worship, we've been using the book Through Worship, and we went back a day to go on Saturdays of Mediocrity for the Win.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of the sermon, like, series of lots of events took place in the worship service that typically don't, but it was one of those, like,
comedy of errors,
but also, like, divine beauty showing up literally at our door through multiple people unexpectedly. And was really this, like, just one of those classic moments of, all right, I'm preaching literally to myself right now.
That's right.
Right. As I'm telling everyone that, and as I'm sharing this piece of, you don't have to be perfect and it can fall apart because of the greatness of God.
That's right.
Right? That, like, God can hold it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, I have to do this right now. Right now I have to put these words into practice.
Isn't that like the best part though? Like realizing it takes a second, but realizing that even our best offerings are still going to fall short, that our best gifts, that our best renditions, that our best answers, that like all of it is like always never going to be good enough. And yet in that imperfection is exactly where we can like take a deep breath that we're like human. Thank God that right. somebody else has this on lock because
we do
nobody
not.
Should put me in charge.
Yeah. 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 And that piece of like, it doesn't have to all be on my shoulders.
Yes. Yes. That's
and,
right.
And like, I can go take a nap.
Yeah, that's right. And the world keeps spinning
right.
somehow, even though we imagine ourselves as so important and like everything hinges on us. It's like, no, actually, like there are some things you can do and a lot that you can't, and like do that well and leave the rest.
Yeah. Mm. Podcast, remember that. Do that well, leave the rest.
I know.
Right?
Yeah, I think we're always in our on our team for the Everything Happens project, we are always having this conversation of like, we are undoing the myth that everything is possible because that's what our culture tries to tell us. It's what the American like dream tries to tell you. It's like bootstrapping and like, man, drunk on positivity is like, everything is possible. Just try harder, work harder, believe more, pray harder, like just fix this. And some of that wild agency is so compelling, right? Like we want to imagine there's something we can do to control our lives. And on the reverse, we don't also imagine that nothing is possible. Sometimes like you really have reached the end of what you can do, but also we need a little bit of space there right in the middle of where like, where we can just ask what is possible today? Like given our limited resources, our limited energy, what we know, what we can, like the time that we have, like what can we do today? And then that's it. Just, like, leave that. Do that well. Do it with, like, honor and integrity and beauty and, like, grit. But just take off the, like, the weight of the world off your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Or the utter despair that, like...
Yeah, both. Both ends.
Yeah.
Right?
They lie a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you practically do that?
Well, we are monsters. Kate and I are monsters. We are the worst at this because we're, like... We are like hustle. Every day is like, what can we do now? What can we do now? Wouldn't it be fun if? And like all the time we're having to peel back and be like, I think our, one of the things that slows me down is realizing that like I have a team that then the more ideas I have, the harder their lives get.
Mm. Yep. Yes.
So that is a helpful check in my system.
I love that.
We love trying new things and we love working hard and we love making things, but I do not have a spirit of perfection. Like I'm not worried with everything working out perfectly. So I always just, I could probably be like a little bit more thorough or something, but I think I am off the hook a little bit for imagining it all has to be just right.
Okay.
And instead it's a lot of like spaghetti on the wall.
Yeah.
Kind of just like fun and try and do something new. And, but it is, I can get very much in the wild possibility like don't see any like hurdles until I do. And then like, man, the like wall that you can run into is hard. Cause it's as soon as like, it's like, you're just like on a track and headed and like every light is green, a la Matthew McConaughey. he was funny. As soon as you hit a roadblock or something happens, it can be really hard to pick up the pieces. Cause you then imagine, is it me? Am I the problem? Mm-hmm. Like, am I a failure? Like, it's funny how those big questions come up, even though it could be a, like a really small little mishap. All of a sudden it's like those deep questions you have locked away because you're like buzzy with activity, like come to the surface. And then you're like, ooh, am I bad? Is it me? Is any of this redeemable? Is this all that imposter syndrome feeling?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't think I've had it figured out entirely, but we are monsters.
You're monsters. do you /know the Enneagram?
I do. And I love it. I'm a 7 with an 8 wing.
Okay.
So.
All right. We're really not supposed to type people, right? Like we're not supposed to do that. And as you're talking about this, like, throw everything at the wall, like, guns a-blazing until you're not, right? I'm like, I bet she's a 7.
That's right.
I bet she's a 7.
It's so funny. Everybody's like, oh, my Enneagram makes me feel bad. But honestly, I think 7s are the best numbers to be. So, I understand why you guys don't want to be your numbers. Yeah. But,
So I am I'm a 2 with a 1 wing. So I do have that perfectionism in my wing.
Mm-hmm.
And our previous, my previous co-pastor of Riverfront, Edwin, was a 7.
Uh-huh.
And so 7s go to 1. And we've talked about the Enneagram before podcast. If you don't know the Enneagram, go look at our Enneagram episode aired about a year ago. But our Edwin's 7 would go to 1 when he's stressed.
Yep.
Right? And so that perfectionism space can be really hard.
Yeah.
And I live in it all the time.
You're like, welcome to my life.
Yeah.
This is how my brain works. How dare you leave that comma out?
Right? And how dare you come over here and enter into this space just because you're stressed? Like, I've been over here.
That's right.
Go away.
I found mine comes out in work stress in a really good way.
Okay.
Because then it can make me, when I'm stressed, I'm like, all right, let's like dot every I, cross every T, like let's knock this out. But yeah, it can get debilitating sometimes, mm-hmm. I think, when I'm very stressed and then I'm like, oh dear God, I don't know a way forward because it all feels like a bad choice.
Yeah. How does that, like, do you have members of your team that you feel like are in that perfectionism space more than you?
Yeah.
Like are either 1s or 2s?
Harriet is a 1 and she is our like right hand, and she like, so everything I just like hand to her and she will do with beautiful thoroughness,
mm-hmm.
that makes me feel a lot more at ease. Or takes the next right step, which is a lot easier. And Kate is a 2 with a 3 wing.
Okay.
So she's like all feely.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. I sit in that feely space.
Right? Yeah. That's good. So she has a lot of, so much heart for everybody around her, which is lovely. And then sometimes I'm like, this is too hard. Let's do something else fun.
Yeah, it's, I love the gift of working on a team,
mm-hmm.
right? And the different pieces that come out, depending on what kind of thing we're working on.
That's right.
Right, like, are we in this really creative space right now? Are we looking at budgets today? Like, what are we doing? And what, that piece of like, what are each of our gifts and our passions and how do we bring those and like cultivate those in one another?
One of the painful things working in a team is that you also adjust for weakness, which I think is really hard. And I know Kate has had a revealing experience of realizing that you actually build a team to like pick up your weakness. Mm-hmm. We need a Harriet in that spot because neither of us will like see things through to completion if it weren't for Harriet, who's like, I will finish this.
Yeah.
No, it's so interesting. Like, they really do reflect back to you in the best way of like, wow, look at how much we can do together. And also in the worst way of like, oh, you're right, I'm really bad at that. And somebody else needs to do that part.
Yep. Yeah, it's a lot of releasing control.
Uh-huh.
All the time.
Yeah, but why? But I should just
be right? in charge. But I should be able to do it all.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Until you realize you really can't.
Until
and
you
me too.
Really can't. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And that we don't, right, we don't need to. Like, mm-hmm. back to the book. We don't, mm-hmm. we don't need to.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. What is giving you life these days?
Well, the spring weather here in Delaware is definitely helping. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to rain a lot this week, but next week it's supposed to be lovely.
I was like, last week was freezing. What Delaware did you live
in? I was not here last week, so, but like seeing all the flowers blossom, this is my favorite time of year. I'm from Denver, Colorado originally, and our spring is quick and sometimes still a little snowy, but we don't have a ton of like flowering things. And so when I moved to North Carolina for school, and now in Delaware, there's still the humidity, I think, brings a lot of like beautiful flowering trees. And so this, like, it like brings me to life it does feel like an important season in my brain of like, oh yeah, wow, winter has been long and man, it's so beautiful. And I can't wait to just be outside and
I agree. Last week was very mad at the world because it was freezing again. And I was like,
weird.
I thought we were done with this.
Our, like, bodies are really into, like, they're, like, very, and even, like, daylight savings. Like, this is the first year I've really noticed, like, I needed it to be light at the end of the day.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I needed the sun to still be shining at 6:30. Otherwise, I was, like, felt so cooped up, and it's just wild how our bodies can, like, feel emotions around the weather.
Yes.
We're silly.
Have you walked Brandywine Park?
Yeah. I have not yet.
Okay. You should walk Brandywine
Park.
That's
what Christian keeps saying is like, but Brandywine. But is that really hilly?
No.
Okay.
It's, well, at least around the river, it's very flat.
It's nice. Okay.
Yeah. Great. Getting down to the river and getting back from the river. But you could just park down there.
Oh, great.
And then you're fine.
That's what I'll do.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah. You can like park at like the zoo and then walk around.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, it's like, yeah.
That's lovely.
It's one of my favorite spots to run, though nice. I always regret the run, like the end of the how to get home.
Yeah.
Like, I just need to call a friend to come pick me up. Yeah. I'm done now, and I now have to walk back up that hill to get to my house. But yeah, Brandywine's great. Have you found spots around here that you've enjoyed walking?
We live right by, in Pike Creek, right by Carousel.
Oh, yeah.
And so we just went there yesterday, and it was so nice and beautiful, and there's horses there. Mm-hmm. So, well, I'm going to need to find some more spots. But
White
I do,
Clay is really close
that's
to
right,
you
that's
as
close.
Well. You should check out some White Clay.
I'm also really excited about just, like, being outside at, like, going to a brewery and, like, drinking delicious beer outside. So
great.
That, like, I heard Constitution Yards is really fun.
Yep.
And I
yeah, so we
like
go
to
Constitution
that.
Yards after worship every Sunday.
Amazing.
It's a good spot. Yeah, there's so lots of fun breweries that have popped up. I feel like...
Yeah.
I feel like pre-pandemic, right, they were just starting to kind of become a thing. And then so many spots were like, okay, we have to have outdoor seating now.
Yeah, that's right.
We can't have indoor.
That's right. That's fun.
Yeah. What, so I asked you, what was life-giving? Mm. What's draining right now?
I think I've had several pretty big life transitions in the last decade, and so I think just being in another one and realizing, like, oh, God, I was just in a place where I had, like, settled and had all my favorites, and, like, man, I loved Durham. We both, my partner Christian and I both loved Durham so much, but his work has brought us to Wilmington, so this is where we live now. So I think it is draining, and this is also for a season until his job will take him somewhere else, and so I think what's draining is the anticipation of moving is always draining. And so then it's like, how much do you want to actually invest in a place?
Mm-hmm.
How much do you want to hang things on the walls? How much do you want to find your favorite coffee shop? How much do you want to, like, make new friends in a place where you might leave again? So I think that feeling is a bit draining. And logically, I know the value of being where you are and the richness. And, like, good God, our whole brand, our whole books, everything we talk about is about, like, the fragility and unpredictability of life. And so realizing that, like, there is deep wisdom in learning to live where you are with the people you are. And so I think logically I can get there, but yeah, it just, I think it is a bit draining to imagine, like, oh, starting over again, here we go. Yeah.
Those new roots, are hard, especially when you don't know if you're going to be here long.
That's right. In Colorado, I lived there for 27 years, so I had deep roots where I could be a Ken of the situation, where, you know, you meet everyone, you can be the great connector, and it's so much harder to do that, just jumping in a little bit, so.
Yeah. Well, we're grateful you jumped in here.
That's so nice.
We're grateful that Ken was that great connector.
I know. Met him at the Nomad.
Yeah,
which is an
Nomad.
Awesome, cool spot.
It is a cool spot. If you have missed it, podcast, Nomad is back open.
That's right.
I think you were there. You were there opening night.
I was. It was very crowded. Yes. I was a little concerned.
I tried to get into Nomad, and we walked in and walked right back out.
You're like, and this is where we all get COVID.
Yeah. No. It was. It was a great night.
It was great.
Friends of ours from Riverfront, Kelly and Nick, were playing right down the street at Deco.
Oh, fun.
Where we will have our Wednesday night Bible study starting back up at the end of April.
Is that the food hall?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the tacos there.
The tacos. And the pizza. Have you had Bardea's pizza? Yeah, it's good.
It's so good.
It's a good. Yeah, so Kelly and Nick were playing there.
Oh,
and
fun.
We're like, you know, we're going to walk over there.
Let's just go there.
We're going to go hang out with Kelly and Nick.
There's table space.
There was a lot more. We had a whole, I had just passed ordination exams, and so we had a little.
Congratulations.
Thanks. We had a whole little thing, and it was like, you know what? This is way more chill and more my vibe than standing room only.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad that you went standing room only.
It was really fun.
Good.
It was really cool.
Yeah. I'm glad you're finding those fun spots
yeah,
in the city.
I think that's right. It's just like, what should we do this week? And yep. Wouldn't it be fun if?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What if you could say, if you could give one piece to our podcast of something to hold on to this week, especially thinking as we are heading into Holy Week.
Yeah, that's right.
As we are heading into spring.
Mm-hmm.
What's a piece of good enough that you're really holding on to these days?
Mm. There's an entry at the very end of Good Enough. I think it's called The Good Gardener. Could be something like that.
Okay.
But I wrote that after really digging into the metaphor of gardening and dirt and God as a good gardener.
Mm.
And I think the piece that sticks with me there that's like so rich with imagery is the idea of hope as being an act of gardening. And I'm not a gardener. I'm mostly it by, you know, I watch Gardener's World on the BBC and I'm like, oh my God, maybe I can have a garden. But so I'm a newbie when it comes to gardeners, but there is a defiant kind of hope when it comes to being a gardener in like the winter, when they're planting these seeds that then will one day sprout. They hope with tender care and hope and light and water. And so I think as we're moving toward Holy Week, towards spring, just, I think I'm struck by the image of the Jesus's tomb is in a garden. John describes that when Mary Magdalene is at the tomb that morning on Easter Sunday, ready to like do the last pieces of preparation for the body because it was Sabbath. So she couldn't finish, anointing it or taking care of it in the way that she would have liked, that she gets there and the body's missing and then somebody walks in the tomb and that person must have had dirt under their fingernails or must have stolen the gardener's uniform because she thinks it's the gardener. She thinks it's the gardener and it's Jesus resurrected. And I just love that she mistakes him for a gardener because I think that that is the very act of God's work in our own lives is planting seeds of hope, tenderly caring for them, watering them, watching them, hoping with just such contented awareness and anticipation that yes, new life will grow in the midst of this like dark, cold season. So I think the image of like Jesus as a gardener in my own life has been really rich, that even though I can't see that new life is might be sprouting up, even though I can't see that deeper roots might be taking hold, even though I can't see that anything good could ever come from this, that like there is a good gardener at the helm.
Thank you. Especially resonate with that for this season of Riverfront. And the ways that our community, has been building this kitchen.
Yeah.
And has been wrestling with questions of food justice and equity around the table. And the ways that spring and Easter birth new life for us every Easter. As we return back outside and as we return to a more public space of worship and as we return to the place and the roots that Riverfront was first called to, I think for as grateful as I am for our indoor spaces, there is something really, it is a thin space at the pavilion. And some, just as I think about returning back outside, and as I think about this being the first Easter that
I will celebrate in person with this community. Mm. It has felt like a season of planting and of gardening without a whole lot of visible fruit.
Yep.
And there has been some fruit, right? There are moments where I'm like, this is good. And like, this is right. And there have been those deep moments of celebration, but for the most part, it has been a hard 2 years.
Yeah.
Right. It has been pandemic. It has been questions of where should we be? It has been, a season of really planting.
Yeah.
And trusting that the work of planting and of tending would lead to fruit and would lead to growth. Mm. And I have just felt this like sense of hope and of something like welling up, right? Mm. Something growing in the last, even just in the last few months. In a way that has been really special this Lent.
Mm.
In a way of that the work of preparation has been good and that we are entering this new season.
Mm.
And so I'm just really grateful for this community that has waited.
Yeah.
Right, that has sat in the darkness,
yep.
That has asked a lot of hard questions, and that our board that has taken some risky next steps, unsure of, is this really the right move?
Yeah.
But we're going to try it for a season, right? We're going to be spaghetti on the wall and see if it works. And I'm excited to meet Jesus at the tomb.
Dirt in his fingernails.
Dirt in his fingernails.
Yeah.
Having worked alongside us.
That's right. He's never surprised by the blooms. You know, that's, I think, the part that's, like, so rich. It's like a gardener knows that there is a certain formula of faithfulness.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Well, I am so grateful that you have joined us today. I'm glad for the nomad and connections.
Right.
And again, just thank you for your work and for your spirit and for sharing a bit of it with us today.
Thanks so much, Chelsea. This is so lovely.
Yeah. Friends at Riverfront, we hope that you'll meet us at that tomb. We hope that you'll join us Easter morning for 6 a.m. sunrise service. Again, it's the best spot to catch the sunrise in the city. The pavilion, like, the sun rises just over the water and then hits the skyline, and it is a good spot to be. And y'all know I am not a morning person, but 6 a.m., it's going to be the spot to be. So if you'll join us Easter morning, and then we'll be in person every Sunday after that, Sunday nights at 5:05. Friends, give thanks for Jessica, and give thanks for each of you. Hope that you continue to journey with us through the end of this Lent and into this new season. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Riverfront Church Podcast. You can connect with us online at riverfrontwilmo.com or on Facebook. Just search for Riverfront Church in Wilmington, Delaware. May God meet you where you are and lead you where you are meant to go.